Hello, everybody. Welcome to another edition of the Music, Money, and Life podcast. This podcast, as always, is brought to you by howtolicenseyourmusic.com. If you are a musician, if you are a songwriter, if you write and record music of any kind, and you're interested in learning how to license your music into TV shows and films, visit my website, howtolicenseyourmusic.com. When you go to that site on the homepage, there's a place to enter your name and email. And when you do so, you'll get a free subscription to my newsletter all about music licensing and how to license your music into TV shows and films. And you'll also get a free ebook and video as soon as you sign up all about music licensing. Today's interview features a interview that I did with Beth Wernick from Imaginary Friends Music Partners. And Beth runs a company that does a lot of music licensing and television shows and films. She's very active in the business. And this interview is one of 20 that's available as a part of my package called the Music Licensing Interview Bundle. There are 20 interviews in all, over 15 hours of content. And the entire package is just $9.97. So if you like this interview and you want more of these kinds of interviews, go to howtolicenseyourmusic.com/interviews. For now, let's go to the interview with Beth Wernick. So I'm on the phone today with Beth Wernick from Imaginary Friends Partners Music.
Music Partners.
I want to get that right. And Imaginary Friends is a music licensing catalog. And Beth, what I thought we'd do is I thought we'd start by having you talk about IMFP. I think that's going to be easier if I just refer to you as IMFP.
IFMP.
IFMP. Oh, my goodness.
Are we that difficult?
But if we could just talk about IFMP and your role there, how long you've been in business, and, when the company was founded.
Well, the company was founded about 10 years ago. I originally had two partners, fabulous singer-songwriters, Stacey Robin and Donna Rollins. And do you want to know how we got the idea for forming the company?
Oh, sure. Yeah, that'd be great.
Well, what happened was I'm also a voiceover actor, and I was working on the television series Melrose Place and had been dabbling in songwriting again. I had a very big music background back in New York. I was a music publicist.
Mm-hmm.
And Donna and I had written a song that wound up being used on Melrose Place, and we were ecstatic and so completely surprised that there was actually a business like that existing. And Stacey Robbins suggested we form our own company. And, of course, the only thing we had was female singer-songwriter material. So we were amazingly lucky. By the seat of our pants, we sent out a 14-song sampler, and we got three licenses right off the bat, which was just so unusual. And as time went on, I realized that we couldn't subsist as a company just using that kind of music. While it was a niche, it wasn't a big enough niche. So at some point, the girls decided, since, you know, I was the one making all the phone calls and getting in all the music, I might as well own the company. And so it became mine about 6 years ago. And although they're still my dearest friends and still help me when I need help with the company, and we consider ourselves an indie catalog of original music. We do have a few well-known artists. We have Kevin Bacon's band, the Bacon Brothers, and mm-hmm. we have Berlin, Terry Nunn's band,
mm-hmm.
and the 80s metal band Vixen. Oh. But everybody else is pretty much an unknown.
Okay. Excellent. And what kind of styles of music do you work with primarily, Beth? Is it all over the map, or are there certain styles of music that you place more frequently?
Well, it's both. We are all over the map. We probably have music in almost every genre there is. We don't have copious amounts of, say, foreign music like Bollywood or, you know, yodeling or things like that.
Mm-hmm.
But we do have, you know, the standard ones. We have pop, rock, metal, country, bluegrass, gospel, singer-songwriter, world, jazz, blues, electronica. Everything in that realm. Now, I can tell you that in terms of television shows, what we license a lot is pop, mm-hmm. dance,
mm-hmm.
rock, hip-hop. I would have to say that dance and pop are maybe the strongest right now. But as you know, with licensing, it goes in trends.
Sure.
10 years ago, it was singer-songwriter with the Dawson's Creeks and the Melrose Place and that those kinds of shows. That trend kind of went away for a while, and hip-hop became much stronger.
Mm-hmm.
But I do see a slight trend of singer-songwriter coming back.
Do you? Just more recently, you see that trend coming back?
More recently. Mm-hmm. I've had more requests for it over the last 6 months than I've had in many years.
Okay. And do you have suggestions, Beth? You know, I work with, you know, I have a subscriber base of several thousand writers, and I work, you know, more one-on-one with several dozen writers. And do you have suggestions just in general for writers, things they can do, you know, if they're interested in getting involved in the music licensing business? What are things songwriters can do to increase their chances, you know, getting things licensed? Obviously, a lot of it's timing, right song, right place, right time. Do you think writers should be writing with certain parameters in mind, or do you think writers should just do what they do it as best as they can do, and try to find people who need what they create?
Well, you don't want to say write in a certain parameter, because that absolutely, you know, stifles the creative element.
Sure.
That being said, mm-hmm. if writers did their homework and actually watched Parenthood and watched, you know, 90210 and watched, you know, the shows that, you know, True Blood, the shows that they're getting tons and tons of songs placed in them, to hear what they're using, they would have a better shot.
Sure.
Every now and then somebody will send something that's so incredibly unique and interesting that I want to send out and get a, you know, send a wild card to a music supervisor. Hey, what do you think of this? But by and large, I can't do that too often, because a music supervisor's needs are very specific.
Right.
I can tell you that True Blood mm-hmm. uses a ton of country music, almost all male vocal.
Okay.
And, you know, they almost took a female vocal song for me, but it didn't stick.
Really?
So, you know, I can't explain why those are their choices. I don't see the scenes in advance, so I can't know.
Mm-hmm.
But I know what they've been taking. So I do suggest that they become aware of not only the styles of songs, but the character themes in the shows.
Mm-hmm.
Who would be wearing an iPod, and what kind of music would be in it? You know, who's having this kind of problem in their life? You know, what kind of music suits the characters or the type of show that it is?
Sure. Sure, no, that makes complete sense. Would you suggest that songwriters connect with someone like you initially, as opposed to trying to directly approach music supervisors? You know, I've had quite a bit of my own music placed through a music publisher, and that was my introduction into the industry, and it
mm-hmm.
seems like, you know, in my experience, that's a better route to go, because publishers and licensing catalogs, you know, people like yourself tend to have more established relationships with music supervisors. What are your suggestions and thoughts as far as getting started?
You know, it really depends on the music supervisor, whether or not an indie artist can get through them.
Sure.
And can approach them in a professional manner. I would have to say, you know, speaking from where I come from,
mm-hmm.
you guys count on my having the relationship. You want to know that I can walk your music in the door, get yourself
sure.
heard. Once I do that, what most don't understand is that I have no control of music after that.
Sure.
I will get email after email saying, is anything of mine getting placed? Is anything of mine sticking? Well, why wouldn't I call you or email you and tell you that the minute it's
exactly.
happening?
Exactly. You would let them
you know.
Know.
It's a question that everybody has on their mind, but it is a question that I don't have time to answer all day long.
Sure.
Obviously, you know, I want my artists to stay in touch with me. I want them to say hello. I have new songs. Are you open to listening right now? Asking permission first from anyone, someone like me or a music supervisor, is the most polite and professional thing you can do. Whereas a lot of the time people just send me a ton of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
There is a thing, I understand, I am a songwriter as well,
mm-hmm.
but in a professional sense, it's very important to have some manners and
sure.
to kind of see the other side. This is the fall season. I have any number of new shows looking for music right now.
Right.
I have sent out leads to my artists asking them to send music that works specifically for this type of show.
Mm-hmm.
I will be digging through my catalog already, but I'm giving them the opportunity to say, well, I think this would work, or I think that would work. But But very often what happens with a writer is they want it so badly, they will send any suggestion, even if you know it doesn't fit.
Sure.
Yeah. And that also is a time waster for someone like myself or a music supervisor.
Sure.
Really knowing what you're submitting to, really knowing what it is you have to bring to the table, makes you a much more valuable artist.
Sure. No.
So yes, of course, artists can try to call music supervisors directly. You'll probably get voicemail.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some are very open. You can go to networking things and meet them, and they'll say, absolutely, send me your stuff, and you can bypass someone like me. That happens all the time. Mm-hmm. But again, you know, I know that people come to me because they know I have the relationships already.
Sure. No, that makes complete sense. And most of the writers that I'm working with, I'm referring to people like you because, you know, like I said, in my experience, you have the connections, you have the relationships, you've done this for the last, you know, 6+ years. So it only makes sense. This kind of leads me to my next question, though, which is, once an artist hooks up with somebody like yourself, are there things artists can do? I mean, you've already sort of alluded to it, but what can artists do beyond just, you know, signing a few songs into your catalog, kind of sitting back and hoping something gets placed? Are there things they can do without, you know, crossing the line into just being annoying to cultivate, you know, more of an ongoing relationship with you?
Absolutely. To begin with, they could create Facebook pages for their music.
Mm-hmm.
They can, you know, let people know when they have gigs, or me.
Right.
You know, they can let me know if they have a wonderful new video. We have an Imaginary Friends Music Partners Facebook page, which everyone is welcome to join. And when my artists come along and they've done an interview in a magazine or on the radio, or they have a brand new video, I always post it because I want the hundreds of people who, you know, are on my list to see what my artists are up to. I will put up tour dates and gig dates. I'll do anything to help promote my artists.
Okay.
I want everyone to take them seriously.
Awesome.
That's definitely one thing. And again, another thing is to let me know if you have something new that you'd like for me to hear. Don't just send it. Ask me if there's time right now. Very often I'll say, yes, send it right away, or I'll say, you know what, this week is really bad. Let's go for next week.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that makes sense. And what about in terms of specific projects? You mentioned that you'll sometimes email writers about, you know,
yes.
Okay. Is that something that they should sort of wait for you, or is it good if they, you know, send you an email every once in a while kind of asking what's going on, what you're involved with?
They certainly can email me and ask what's going on and, you know, what can they be pitched to. That doesn't bother me as much as somebody sending me an email or calling me and telling me how their song is perfect for such and such TV show.
Right.
Very often, they're not right.
Sure.
Because I have the specifics of what the music supervisor wants. It's very often different from what a songwriter perceives. And that isn't to say the songwriter isn't a smart person. It's just that, you know, I'll give you an example. There was a show that took place in a specific American city, and there was a writer who had a song about a specific neighborhood in that specific American city, and he insisted it was right for this show.
Mm-hmm.
It was not. The show was only using hip-hop. His song was folk,
mm-hmm.
almost a folkish singer-songwriter. And yet he, you know, there was this insistence, you know, and I think that the artists have to know that I pretty much know what I'm doing.
Right.
That I watch the shows, I listen, I talk to the music supervisors, I get the specifics from them. I do think out of the box. I'm not closed-minded. I will listen. I will take a listen to their suggestions, even if I think maybe they're not right, and reconsider. Mm-hmm. But it is a really good idea to know what the shows really want.
Sure. Well, that makes perfect sense. And your reputation and professionalism is at stake too, right, Beth? I mean, if you submit something
Absolutely.
That's completely not what a supervisor is looking for, it doesn't really make you look good, right?
If I send it, no.
Yeah.
I can't.
Yeah.
And the writers have to understand that.
Yeah. Well, I understand that.
No, you do.
No, I understand that just because with my marketing company, Renegade Music, you know, I occasionally submit directly to supervisors, and I find the exact same thing. I think writers are just so eager to get their music placed that they, you know, and I kind of think sometimes that they know that it's not exactly, I mean, like last week I was looking for a very specific type of vocal music, and I had you know, people sending in instrumental songs when it was really clear that it was specifically vocal only track. So, you know, I can't blame the writers for wanting to get their stuff placed, but you have.
Nor do I.
Yeah.
But that eagerness should be turned inward toward writing great music.
Yep.
And not sending a song that's inappropriate.
Exactly. I agree. Beth, can we talk a little bit about, you know, in my newsletter that I send out, I talk about, you know, how much money I've made for different songs I've licensed. Can you kind of give us a sense of, you know, it sounds like you're doing a lot of, you know, major network television shows, things like True Blood,
yes.
And I know
and film,
and I know you do some young, you know, daytime drama stuff. Can you kind of give us a sense of different, you know, what things pay for different placements?
Absolutely, I can run the gamut with you on that. I can tell you that 6 years ago, a certain TV show gave me $8,000 aside for a song.
Wow.
Those days do not exist anymore for an indie artist.
They simply don't.
The recession, the economy, budgets, whatever, have dropped the prices so much that I will start with what you mentioned, soap operas. Soap operas, MTV, any shows done by Bun and Murray, which are like for MTV or VH1 or the E! Network.
Mm-hmm.
These shows do not have upfront budgets for songs, unless you are an A-lister,
okay?
They will take copious amounts of indie music, though, mm-hmm. and these are gratis cues, and you get royalties.
Right.
Where I used to think this was a terrible thing, I now am excited about it because they rerun the shows so many times over the course of a month
mm-hmm.
that the writers and, you know, publishers tend to make more money than they would from a license.
Okay.
So I don't argue about those anymore.
Okay.
I see that people are making money from them. But that's the low end of the spectrum where you get nothing up front.
Okay.
I can tell you that there are films and TV shows that are as low as 500 a cue.
Right.
And I can tell you about the highest right now is 5,000.
Okay.
Depending on how it's being used.
And 5,000 would be for, would this be like a primetime major network?
Telefilm, network telefilm, or a cable telefilm might go that high,
okay.
depending on the song. Sometimes a show that will use your cue twice, instead of calling it, they have this thing where they call it an interrupted cue, and they won't pay you for two uses,
mm-hmm.
which is amazing to me, just amazing to me, but they do it. Yeah. But sometimes the people will honor that they're using it in two different places in the show, and they will pay you for two cues, and you can... You know, that's a ballpark for something like that. I would have to say that generally, there's a certain network that I have a blanket license fee with $4,000 a song.
Okay.
And then other shows will give me upwards of $15,000 to $3,000. And I would say that that's the general realm.
Okay. And in terms of back-end royalties, you know, you mentioned, like, some of the licenses where they don't pay anything up front, but then they're replayed
mm-hmm.
over and over.
Mm-hmm.
Can you give writers sort of an idea of the potential? You know, obviously it depends on how often.
Yes, I actually can. I see a statement I got from ASCAP a couple of months ago.
Mm-hmm.
I made from one writer a little over $1,000.
Okay.
From one writer in the MTV realm.
Okay.
Which means that he made three times that.
Right, because you don't do the typical 50-50. I don't know if you want to talk.
Well, we get 50% of the publishing with the retitle.
Okay.
But that means the others, that's 25% actually of the whole picture.
Right.
So the writer and other publisher is getting 75%.
Right.
So I know that person made well over $3,000 from me alone.
Wow. That's,
just for that stuff.
That's great.
For one quarter. We're only talking about one quarter. It, you know, this plays out four times a year.
Right.
So to me, that's a really good amount of money.
Yeah. No, that's excellent. If you can do that every quarter, that's a nice part-time revenue stream.
It's really nice. Pays for pressing a few CDs.
Nice. Well, Beth, in terms of writers hooking up with you, what is your policy in terms of writers submitting music to you? Are you open to hearing from, you know, anyone who writes great music, or do people have to go through someone like me who submits music on their behalf? How does that work?
Oh, no, you know, we ask for, you know, on our website, it says no unsolicited material, but if you email me and say this is the genre that you have,
mm-hmm.
your music is free and clear, you own the masters and you own the publishing, everything is master quality, ready for TV, ready for a film, then we will consider giving it a listen, absolutely. But what happens a lot of the times is somebody will send me their rough, they will send me, you know, their scratch vocals.
Right.
They'll, you know, things that are absolutely not ready to go on television or in a film. And I honestly, as much as I would love to, I can't listen to something that isn't ready to go.
Sure.
There just isn't time for it.
That makes sense. Can you tell, how big is your catalog, Beth? Can you...
Oh, it's at least 7,000 songs right now. It's probably more.
Okay.
I can't keep track. Because, you know, we take on new music almost every single day.
Do you? Well, you seem, just in my experience, really, I mean, in terms of the music I've submitted to you, really selective about who you accept, which I think is great, because what I see happening a lot is a lot of libraries that I work with accept, I mean, not everything that I send them, but a really high percentage, and I just know that the vast majority of that is just sitting in their catalog, not getting licensed. So I'm assuming by your...
Well, you have to... There is a big difference between an indie catalog and a library.
Yeah.
And that might be where we're talking about. I am looking for really solid songwriters and artists who are doing this for a living.
Sure.
They're trying to make this their life's work. I really want to see that they are gigging and making professional CDs and really, really care about what they're doing. And when my turnaround time is 24 hours, they can actually turn something around in 24 hours.
Right.
You know, I don't need, well, you know, my kid was crying and I had to work late at my bartending job. These stories don't help me or you. I need them to be ready to go. The truth is, I have a ton of music. I pitch wherever appropriate. Yeah. Sometimes an appropriate place doesn't show up for a long, long time.
Right.
I have a Latin artist whose music I am crazy about, and there used to be more requests for that. They stopped for a while. Now things are picking up again.
Yeah.
I see other places that it might work. So, you know, I had an artist who was in my catalog for 2 years before he got a placement.
Really?
And then he got three in a row. Then it slowed down again.
Sure.
You know? I can tell you that what's really, you know, difficult, because nobody has a crystal ball, you don't know how close you've come sometimes.
Yeah.
And I know so many songs that have been temped into a show or into a film and then not happen.
Right.
And it doesn't make me feel good to email a songwriter and say, wow, your song was in, and then they took it out during the final mix.
Yeah.
Do you really want to know that?
Sure.
Do you really want that information?
No, that makes perfect sense.
Yeah, sometimes I have to tell them. Sometimes I have to tell them because... You know, you really want to make sure it's 100% clear. You know, maybe somebody forgot a songwriter where they didn't disclose.
Yeah.
Things like that can happen. But it's painful for me to have to say to someone, wow, you made it to the final mix, but the network needed to edit out a scene, and guess what?
Yeah. That makes perfect sense. And I know in my own experience working with the publisher that I've worked with, you know, I've done more a lot of soap opera stuff. That was sort of her niche, but... She would occasionally submit to film projects too, and I would bug her and pester her and let me know which songs are you submitting me to, and like you said, it's almost sort of a moot point. If it's not accepted, then even if your song was pitched or got close, it doesn't really, at the end of the day, it's either in or out, right?
Exactly.
Well, Beth,
do
you have any other suggestions on how writers... You know, you've given us a lot of good feedback. Is there anything else you can talk about just in general, things writers can do
Yes.
Yeah.
I want to say that there's something that is absolutely epidemic and it has to stop. And that is writers submitting MP3s that they don't even encode their own name on.
Yep.
When you were in elementary school and you took a test, what's the first thing you had to do?
You had to write your name.
Thank you. We're way past elementary school here.
Yeah. Sure.
And I cannot tell you how many MP3s I receive without even the track name. And it says track one and there's no name.
Right.
How am I, with a catalog of 7,000 plus songs, supposed to remember you? If you don't make me remember you, why should I?
Right.
It needs to read in iTunes. Most music supervisors and myself use iTunes. Put the song title in, and don't put master final version number 444 with the date on it.
Right.
Put the song title.
That doesn't help you.
Put the artist's name. If you're not the artist, put the artist who's singing or, you know, the band or whatever in there. If you don't have a professional CD, put your name where it says CD so I know it came from you. put the genre in. Can I take a minute to talk about the genre and why that's important?
Yeah, absolutely.
When you send music to music supervisors, you have no idea what their database looks like.
Right.
But if it's Thursday morning and they need public domain holiday songs, they're going to type into iTunes the word holiday.
Right. Okay, gotcha. They're going to search right in.
Okay, so yeah. So if you didn't, and I didn't have the time to,
right,
your song isn't going to be seen or heard.
Sure. No, that makes...
Why would you want to submit a song that without making sure every possible thing you could do to get that song listened to is available to the people listening?
Sure. Now, I think it's sort of like this is the digital equivalent of when you would send in physical CDs, writers who would not put their contact information on their package. So this is, you know, now we're in the digital age, so you have to tag your songs.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I'd also like to further that digital conversation by saying I can't believe how many songwriters do not know how to make a zip file,
mm-hmm.
do not know that there are free FTP servers out there, and I would like to give a big shout-out to WeTransfer.com.
Mm-hmm.
They take huge files. It's free on every level. It's not like you send it where you have to at some point sign up to get a bigger file. It will take really big files. I'm a Mac user, so I know how to walk anybody through making a zip file on a Mac, but I don't know how to do it on a PC. But to know how to make a zip file, to submit all the songs at one time and put it on that FTP transfer so that I don't have to download 52 songs from you is a great time saver for me. It makes me like you so much more. So everybody needs to get their digital skills up.
Okay.
That being said, there are still about a dozen music supervisors that really want CDs still.
Okay.
Some that only take CDs.
Mm-hmm.
And they do not want sleeves. They do not want skinny cases. They cannot file them if you don't have a CD with a spine that has your name and your album title.
Mm-hmm.
So that's another thing. People think they're saving money, but if you want to get your songs placed, your CD has to be appropriate.
Okay. So I think the messages make it real easy for supervisors
to find
your music. Yeah, that makes perfect common sense to me.
Absolutely.
Anything else, Beth? Any other closing thoughts that you can leave writers with?
Yeah, I know that it can be very frustrating. I have been an artist myself. I had record deals that fell through. I know how tough it can be. The best thing you can do for yourself is to have a great attitude.
Mm-hmm.
Love what you're doing. Be kind, be professional, be courteous.
Mm-hmm.
The best foot that you put forward, the best attitude you have, if you stop saying, well, I guess I didn't make it, my music's terrible because nobody's placed it yet, that attitude defeats you.
Sure.
Believe in yourself. Believe in your music. Get better at it all the time.
Sure.
The minute you stop growing, the minute you stop thinking that you've got what it takes, you won't have what it takes.
Sure. And also, if I could just jump in, I would also...
Go ahead.
What I always suggest to writers is you really have to believe in yourself at the end of the day. I mean, this is an industry comprised of a bunch of different opinions. And granted, some of them are more educated than others, but I oftentimes have people send me stuff and they just want to know, is their music good enough? And, you know, usually... My response is you really need to determine whether or not your music is good enough. You know, like if you really want to do this, educate yourself about the business, you know, listen to other music that's getting licensed and get your music to where it needs to be.
You do have to be self-educated, but you also have to understand that you may think it's the greatest song in the world, but it's just not current.
Right.
And that's a very important word in the industry. If your music is not current. Now, yes, sometimes I will get a request for old school country.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some kind of 80s rock that we can use in a scene that has a flashback.
Mm-hmm.
Those things still exist. But in terms of what is broadly used, your music has to be current. Do you sound like the Black Eyed Peas? Do you have the Lady Gaga vibe? Are you kind of like Kesha? Are you Phoenix? Are you Spoon? Who are you?
Right.
You know, what... When the music supervisor comes to me, they say, we're looking for the Black Keys.
Right.
Is that who you are?
Right.
You know, or do you have the sound that's kind of, you know, Disney?
Right.
Figure out who you are. I think once you figure out who you are, you'll make it a lot easier for how you represent yourself or present yourself to someone like myself or a music supervisor.
Right. So would you say in general, the more current sounding, the better?
Well, I don't want to stifle anybody's creativity, but yes.
Yeah. Because yes. Typically supervisors...
When I say watch those TV shows, listen to what they're using.
Yep.
Listen to what they're asking for. Listen to what they're using. If I say the Black Keys, don't send me something that isn't the Black Keys.
Right. It's not going to work. Not going to be a good...
If I say Zac Brown, don't send me something that isn't Zac Brown.
Right.
You know, if I say Rihanna, try to do Rihanna.
Right.
You know, that get yourself as close to that as you can.
Right.
Now, I can tell you that there have been times, as I said before, that I've sent in a wild card.
Mm-hmm.
If there's time for one more little story, this happened quite a few years ago on the TV show Numbers, but they had wanted to replace a James Taylor song.
Mm-hmm.
Why do people replace songs? Because they can't afford them.
Right.
So they come to someone like me for affordable indie songs. And I have an artist who definitely sings and sounds like James Taylor and has folk music.
Mm-hmm.
But I also had another artist who was my concept of James Taylor in the new millennium.
Mm-hmm.
And I put both CDs in the envelope and sent it.
Mm-hmm.
48 hours later, they called me up about the other artist. The one who I felt was more current.
Right.
And they said, we love him. The music editors are going crazy. And even asked me which song I thought was the one to use.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
They couldn't even make up their minds.
Right. So even though...
So he got a wonderful...
And he was... He sounded less like James Taylor, but...
Less like James Taylor, but more like what he would listen to today.
Okay.
And it worked. It absolutely worked. So, you know, every now and then somebody has to trust my judgment.
Right.
You know, so sometimes I really do know what I'm doing.
Right. Well, this has been wonderful information. I think this is, you know, one of the better interviews I've done. I love your enthusiasm.
That.
And I really appreciate you taking the time to talk to me. And I know that the writers that listen to this are going to get a lot of value out of this, Beth. So I really appreciate your generosity.
Oh, thank you.
With your time.
I sure hope they get something out of it. And songwriters, please know that I love you. I just want you to do your best work.
Excellent. And what's your website address, Beth?
It's imaginaryfriends.com.
Imaginaryfriends.com. Well, Beth, thanks so much for doing this. Have a great day.
You too. Thank you. Bye now.
Bye-bye.